And I have some instructions to read. Thank you. So, good evening. Welcome to the meeting of the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners for today, Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019. If you wish to become more involved in the Neighborhood Council system and are not on our mailing list, please sign up at the table on the sign-in kiosk. You can also sign up on your phone by texting commission to 555-888. During the meeting tonight, we will discuss the items listed on the meeting agenda in numerical order, unless I receive a request from a board member to take an item out of order. Copies of the agenda and related documents are available for you on the table in the back. If any board member has a conflict of interest at the time an agenda item is announced for discussion, the board member should identify the general nature of the conflict, indicate that he or she is recusing him or herself from participating in the matter, and leave the room during the duration of the discussion of the item. Before we make a decision on any item, members of the public will have an opportunity to provide comments on the item under consideration. Members of the public who wish to speak on multiple agenda items shall be allowed to speak for a total of 5 minutes per meeting and may allocate time in 1 minute increments per item when the agenda item is called, or they may speak during the multiple agenda item comment period for 5 minutes on multiple agenda items. If you have a general comment on any item that is not listed on the agenda, you may provide your comment during the public comments portion of the meeting. Public comments should be directed to the board rather than to individuals. Please understand there are applicable laws that limit the actions we may take during tonight's meeting. Thus, we may be legally prohibited from acting on a concern that you have expressed. However, your concern may become the topic of discussion at a future board meeting after we have had the chance to list the item on the agenda. Should you wish to comment at this meeting, please fill out an electronic speaker request on the speaker card kiosk for each agenda item you wish to address so that you may be heard. You will be called by me when it is your turn to speak. Please be sure to place the number of the agenda item you wish to speak about on the speaker request form. Speaker requests may be filled out using the speaker card kiosk located on the table by texting commission to 555-888 or via the website at empowerla.org, commission, policies, and meetings. If you intend to speak on any items, you must submit your electronic speaker request prior to the start of the meeting or prior to the call of that item. When a person is speaking, they are entitled to courtesy and respect. Please refrain from any other discussion in the room. If you wish to chat, please take the discussion outside while our meeting is in session. We treat one another with respect. That means we act with civility and decorum. Competing viewpoints may be articulated without the need for inappropriate or uncivil actions. Last but not least, please switch your cell phone ringers to vibrate or silent. Thank you very much for listening to all those instructions. I will now take the roll.
Commissioner Atkinson?
Here.
Commissioner Lippman?
Here.
Commissioner Schaefer?
Here.
Commissioner Regalado?
Here.
Commissioner Webby? Absent. Commissioner Bull Ramirez? Absent.
Thank you.
We have quorum.
Next item on the agenda number 3 is the approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of March the 18th. If the board members have read the minutes, is there a motion to accept the minutes, or are there any corrections to the minutes that you can see?
Well, at the current time, I'll move the minutes as they appear.
No? Anything? All right, so.
I'll second.
So do I have a motion to accept the minutes?
Yep.
Who seconded?
I did.
You? Okay. So the motion has been moved by Commissioner Schaefer and seconded by Commissioner Lippman to accept the minutes of March the 18th. All in favor, say raise your hand. All right. It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item. Number four is discussion with council representatives on any neighborhood council resolution or community impact statement filed with the city clerk which relates to any agenda item listed or being considered on this agenda for the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners. I'm assuming that we have no community impact statements to look at. Nope?
No.
All right. That's item number four. Item number five is the multiple agenda item comment period that I mentioned in the instructions, where comments by members of the public who have submitted multiple speaker cards and want to speak on all items for up to 5 minutes at one time can choose to speak during the multiple agenda items comment period. Members of the public who choose to speak during the multiple agenda item period will be given the opportunity to also speak during the general public comment, which is for 1 minute, I believe. So is there anyone here that would like to speak on multiple agenda items? Okay, Mr. Yu, hold on just a sec. Because you signed up to speak on agenda item number five. Right? So that's just one item.
Yeah.
So, I think it. Okay, I lost my list. Oh. Hold on. Hit that one. I don't know which one to hit, I just didn't.
It's slow today. The internet's
it's going around and around and around. It's coming.
Do, 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 do. Yeah, there's no Wi-Fi.
So did you want to talk more than on agenda item number five?
Announcement about the special events.
Oh, number five is the multiple agenda item, okay, but you didn't list which item you were going to speak on.
Yeah. Good evening, everybody. My name is Raymond. You're happy Easter. Just letting you know that I'm defending and fighting the current existing 8-inch small size signal has needs to be replaced means defending the small signal has by converting, upgrading them into 12-inch large size signals at Broadway and Bernard Street, Royal Pagoda Motel, Chinatown, LA before closing its door. But the day after tomorrow, April 4th, 2019, is my historic cultural North Neighborhood Council election day location at Alpine Recreational Center at 817 North Yale Street in Chinatown, Los Angeles, California, 90012. My Angelica Lopez Moyes will run for the election and will have to swing by there. Then that's on Thursday, April 4th in the afternoon in Chinatown for the HCNNC elections. Sunday, and followed by that, I have an announcement that we will all be attending the Run to Remember Los Angeles 5K, 10K, and the half marathon will take place at Westfield Mall, Century City, Avenue of the Stars and Santa Monica Boulevard start and finish line scheduled for Sunday, April 7th, 2019 at 6:30 a.m. is the half marathon to start running through Burton Way, La Cienega Boulevard, and passing through Century City, and then on Pico Boulevard to La Cienega and back to the finish line in Century City. 7:30 a.m. is the 5K run running through Charleville and then the Fox Studios back lot, and then 8:15 a.m. is the 10K run running through Beverly Hills Civic Center. That's one to remember LA.org Sunday, April 7th, 2019. We will attend Run to Remember Century City, the new location. And then the Palm Sunday, April 14th, Easter Sunday, April 21. And then finally, the Los Angeles is the city of, okay, and also that Ciclavia is being celebrated, that Ciclavia is having a new restoration route in Wilmington. Our city is having the Ciclaria Wilmington route on Avalon Boulevard starting from A Street to Harry Bridges Boulevard. It ends on Harry Bridges Boulevard next to the Harbor, Harry Bridges Boulevard and Figueroa Street off the 110 freeway, scheduled for Sunday, April 28, 2019 from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Ciclaria.org 213-355-8500. Please notice that this area will have Ciclaria Wilmington LA 2050 Sunday, April 28, 2019, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We will be there. When this area has Ciclaria, we go there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yu.
It conflicts with the Fiesta Broadway, Sunday, April 28, 2019, downtown LA. But we go to Ciclaria Sunday, April 28, before Cinco de Mayo.
Are you going to be at all of them?
I'm just going to Century City this Sunday, and then Ciclaria Wilmington, April 28, because we feel like enjoying Ciclaria Wilmington April 28th before Cinco de Mayo. It's an open street festival for the bicycles, motor-free traffic, car-free traffic. I found out on Ciclaria.org. Take a look at it.
Thanks, Raymond.
Hi, Raymond.
He's out.
Item number 6. Are verbal updates from representatives of the mayor, LA City Council, or other city representatives. I believe we don't have anyone here under those categories. Okay. All right. Number 7. And we do have comment on that. Number 7 is discussion with various harbor area neighborhood councils, who are probably here tonight, who wish to report concerns, operations, and best practices. Neighborhood council representatives should complete the questionnaire, which one did, in advance of the meeting, and this matter will last a maximum of 20 minutes, depending on how many neighborhood councils are here, and the time will be divided among those representatives wishing to speak, and it's about 20 minutes. Number 7. That's 12 and 13. So under item number 7 on the computer, we have Lori Jacobs.
Thank you.
Did you give us a handout?
Yes. Yes, I did. I gave you a handout. My name is Lori Jacobs. I'm Vice President of the Northwest San Pedro Neighborhood Council and Chair of our Youth and Outreach Committee. And first of all, thank you for all the work that you do. It's very much appreciated. My issue is really right now with the city clerk's office. And not to be rude, but right now I'm calling them the event prevention team. I've given you an outline here that I'll kind of paraphrase. So our neighborhood council puts on an annual event called Pathways to Employment. And this is our 8th year doing it. We've received Empower LA awards for it. We've received accolades from Mayor Garcetti. And we're very proud of this event. And it's a day for youth ages 16 to 24 to get job preparation and career guidance skills. And I won't go into great detail. I attached a postcard of the event, and you could look it up. So we've been doing this for our 8th year. And this year, each year we give out backpacks to the youth there so they can put all the materials that are handed out to them. And a lot of the children or the youth that attend this are underserved or very low income. And so this nice backpack we've been giving them has been very much appreciated. We have our name on there and the Pathways to Employment event. We had some leftover inventory. We just needed to order 50 more for this year, and the city clerk decided no. Even though we've been buying them every year, they would not even approve our event until we were willing to take the backpacks off of there. They felt this was an extravagant expenditure. It was never an extravagant expenditure before, and we ordered more in the past. We get a good price on these. And I want you to see, this is a quality backpack. We're not giving some junk out there. But we don't give these out at every event we're at. We're not sitting out at First Thursday handing these out to everybody. These are very purposeful on what we're using these for. So it was very disappointing to have them do that. We feel a neighborhood council in good standing. We have an excellent treasurer, okay, who makes us dot our I's and cross our T's and do everything we can. I try to follow all the rules. I am a legal beagle. This was just so disappointing. So I guess when or where did they change their spending policy? Where's the definition of what an extravagant expenditure is? And where's the common sense? Where's, you know, we tried to talk to the city council, to the city clerk, and no matter what we said, they said no, and we won't even approve your event until you remove the backpacks from there. So I can only hope this Saturday when we have our event that we have enough backpacks for all the youth. Now, I'm going to give out our canvas bags that we have. But if you look at the postcard on my letter, there's even a picture of the backpack on there. And this is just one of a few times that we've run across things like this, where the city clerk has now subjectively changed things or said, well, this was always a rule, but now we're enforcing it. My crystal ball didn't know that. So I can't even tell you how many hours I give on this event. I don't get paid, as you know, and I do it because I, you know, from the heart that I want to help our youth have a leg up. So I'm at time. Okay. Yeah. So I'm just hoping that you could do something with the city clerk to try and get them on board.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Are you allowed to ask questions? We're not allowed to ask questions, but I will say that it's not, now's not the time where we can bring up these issues, but we can later on in the agenda. And I will just say that my question would relate to, and maybe the city attorney or the department can answer this, is, you know, we are, as the commission, the charter says we have oversight over the department in terms of policy. We determine policy for the neighborhood council system. We don't have any oversight over the day-to-day operations, but there's nothing that says about the city clerk. And since many of the functions of neighborhood councils have been transferred to city clerk, I wonder what, if any, oversight or role we play in terms of the city clerk. So maybe it's an issue that we can address maybe later in the department's report or the city attorney's reports.
Can I just say that I understand
we probably could make a request on the agenda. The city clerk has to come back and explain. You know, the city clerk tried to explain what extravagant costs were, and they didn't do a very good job when they were here before on what they consider extravagant. And we need them to be a little bit more specific on how they dix projects from a neighborhood council budget, especially a budget that's been the same for the forever.
And I know there's neighborhood councils that misuse funds or don't think things thoroughly, but I think that we've demonstrated a really good, responsible history. And sometimes you just got to think and use some common sense is all I'm asking. And deal with the neighborhood councils who aren't using or misappropriating funds or not using them wisely, but support the neighborhood councils who are out there doing our job. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I have a question for the city attorney. My question is that since the oversight of the treasury and everything is under the city clerk, is there any way to override a decision? And the only reason I'm asking is because there's a deadline on their project. So when they make a decision on expenses that doesn't bust the budget, how is there any reprieve or any way to override that or complain or get an adjustment, or is there anything that can be done legally with the city clerk? I mean, is that the last word? Sorry to give you a difficult question, but
I'm going to say Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins, I believe any appeal regarding a city clerk determination would be up, you know, with the higher up at the city clerk's office. I do not believe, and I don't know a definitive on this, but I do not believe that Bonk has oversight on the administrative functions of the city.
So could we, as a commission, ask Dunn to question the city clerk about what the purpose of of nixing a $424 expense was all about? Is there any way that we can find out what the heck is going on, is what I guess is my question. I mean, it's a policy. I mean, we're talking about a policy of how they spend their money.
Either you'd have to address that to Dunn as to what those relationships are. I'm quite
certain
that.
So I can make a request to.
Yeah.
Because I would like Dunn to follow through for that then and to send out some kind of explanation on why such a small amount of money was nixed so adamantly by the city clerk on a function that they do every year and the same amount of money that they spend every year, unless somehow they've over-busted their budget.
Gracie Liu, General Manager for the Department of Empowerment. I don't even have that information. I don't know why city clerk made that determination. So I can follow up with city clerk right now. I mean, I'm texting Holly as we're speaking, to let her know that there's this issue so that her staff can follow up.
I appreciate what you're saying very much, that if there's an appeals process, that would be very helpful. I just want to point out that we spent $2,500 having an all-day event with about 150 youth and 80 adults, feeding them lunch, doing all this work. I challenge any other group to put something on with the kind of budget. So I can tell you, this is not excessive. But if there was an appeals process, that would be extremely helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob Galfan. I would just like to ask a question based on Laurie's comments, which is, how is it that the clerk, city clerk, has the power and authority to make what's essentially a judgmental decision on an expenditure by a neighborhood council that isn't a clear-cut violation? This never happened before. In fact, the long history of Dunn is that certainly in the early years, they didn't exercise that kind of authority almost at all. It was considered the right and duty of the governing board to make such decisions.
Thank you. Christian Guzman.
Good evening. My name is Christian Guzman. I'm from the Wilmington Neighborhood Council. So today I wanted to talk mostly about some bureaucratic hurdles that have been happening recently, particularly in regards to, I think, the Neighborhood Council being equipped with the tools to protect itself. So recently we've kind of had like a very vocal minority, which is understandable in times. I'm a huge proponent of freedom of speech, and the public has a right to criticize its government. However, it's in the past few months, it's been where there's a lot of shouting going on and some of the board members feeling like their safety is threatened. And currently, I'm the secretary, and I was trying to work pretty hard to get some police there, you know, so we'd feel a little more comfortable, so that the public, the majority of the public, has a right to an orderly meeting, even though there's a disruptive minority. And I just have been running into a lot of bureaucratic hurdles with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment and somewhat to a lesser extent the city attorneys on doing that, partly because I'm not the chair, and I've been told several times by the liaison from the department that, you know, your chair has to initiate this or has to initiate that. And at the time, the chair was sort of a co-conspirator with this minority. So it made it a very difficult position to be in for my council. One of my council people actually she felt like she wanted to bring a bat to the meeting just in case. So I'm hoping we get the police at our next meeting. We budgeted the money. And so my request is the department or the commission review. I know you're going to be talking about some uniform standards. I think it'd be very worth it to have some uniform training and knowledge for all neighborhood council people on how they can defend themselves and maintain order and maintain civility. I know we have the code of conduct, but it's often hard to apply that to just a person from the public who comes in and has like a terrible agenda. So thank you for taking the time to be here and listen to that. Oh, in addition, I would always appreciate more legal aid. It's very difficult at times to speak to the gentleman and gentlewoman over here. So more attorneys would always be appreciated.
Thank you. Any more on number 7? We didn't. All right, that was item number 7. And we got all the speakers. So we will now move on to item number 8. Do we have any representatives here from the neighborhood, from the budget advocates? Nope. All right. That was item number 8, and we were going to get a verbal update from them. Number 9 is general public comment from the public on non-agenda items. You can come and speak about issues that are not on the agenda for a total of 2 minutes each. Each speaker gets 2 minutes. And I think we have, for general comments, we have Melanie LeBrock.
Hi. My name is Melanie.
Was I close?
Good evening to everybody. I'm the treasurer for Northwest San Pedro Neighborhood Council, and I am a budget advocate. I probably should have put this on item number 7, but I put number 9. But anyway, what I'm here for is to talk about the triangle of communication that goes between Dunn, city clerk, and neighborhood councils. There seems to be where you can get one story from one, a different story when you talk to city clerk, and then somehow the translation is kind of like confused when it gets to the NC, especially regarding funding. The thing that Lori had talked about, I appealed up to Melvin about it. And his interpretation on it was different, was the same with city clerk, and said that the backpacks were excessive and that it was a ruling on the city clerk when they redid the funding manual, that they weren't an item that was excessive. And so what I had asked of them was that, okay, well, are we going to play roll the dice every time we put in an event as to whether or not this is going to be an excessive item or whether or not this is going to be a okay item? Because things need to be more concise as to, okay, this is a list of things that are appropriate for us to use money for out of the NC, and these things are the lists that are non-appropriate to use. And to play roll of the dice and play lottery as to whether or not something's going to be covered is an inefficient way to run the NCs and for the NCs to be out there planning events. My other concern is that something that you guys discussed was the rollover thing. Again, it was a different story from Melvin when he came to your bonk meeting versus what the city clerks were saying, that the rollover process was not lined out yet, that it was in the manual, but they hadn't figured out how it was going to happen. Since then, I've been told that what's going to happen is we will do our budget, as we always do, for the $42,000. Then the audit will be done as to how much money we have left. Then in August, maybe at the end of August, we will have to redo a second budget to be approved with the rollover money in it. That's what I've been told. Okay, so it's just kind of like it changes day to day, and that's not a way, again, to run efficiently a neighborhood council or a funding system. So, move forward this last week. We have been fighting since November to get a contract for our audio service guy for the harbor area. Northwest, in January, did the whole thing, provided, voted on the contract, did the board count vote, everything, submitted it to Jeff Brill. When it went to Jeff Brill, he never got back to me. I CC'd Shauna, I CC'd Melvin, nothing. All of a sudden, I keep asking Shauna, what's going on? What's going on? We need to pay him. He's given services. Services rendered. We can't pay him. Well, speed forward this last week, we get an email about Lloyd Staffing. They've had an RFP. Their contract ended June 2018. They've had an RFP out, and just now, the other day, approved their contract for this year. They're telling all the NCs now that they have to pay them a higher rate and possibly be retroactive to pay them for the whole year. How can we plan a budget effectively for an NC? That's not how a corporation runs. That's not how a business runs. LA City is a business when you have NCs and you're using city money. You are fiduciary responsible, and when you do contracts, they're fiscal year to fiscal year. You don't change a contract three quarters of the way through and then expect the business to turn around and retroactive and pay it and pay going forward a higher rate. You budgeted for a certain amount for the year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the information, though. It was very interesting, and it could be something that we'll agendize.
Commissioner, can I just make a comment? Gracie Liu, General Manager for the Department of Labor Empowerment. Thank you, Melanie, for bringing up these issues. And I just wanted to clarify. I think there's been some confusion in terms of who works with the department and who works with City Clerk. Melvin and Jeff actually went to City Clerk along with this NNC funding program 2 years ago. So it is coming from City Clerk, and I will let Holly know of your concerns, and I'll make sure that she gets your letter as well.
Let's see, just make sure I got everybody. This is item number 7.
There is somebody who filled one.
I'm sorry, item number 9. That was item number 9. Yeah. I think I got. Oh, okay, item number 9. Wendy Barnes Farrell. Good evening.
Good evening. I came here to make a public comment.
You didn't come to sing to us, did you?
I could.
She's a wonderful singer.
But you probably don't want that right now. I came to talk to you about the San Pedro Music Festival, the inaugural. It is going to be at the Warner Grand Theater on May 12th, which is Mother's Day. And I wanted to invite everybody and to let everybody know what's happening, because I find that a lot of times people will say, I didn't know about it, I wish I had known. So I am going everywhere, spreading the word all over, because I'm very passionate about bringing this type of music to San Pedro. And when I say this type, I mean quality. Not that we don't have quality, but that's what I'm, promising to bring. I'm going to be one of the performers. I have cards available. I would love to leave back there on the table for anybody to take for you. And we have Azar Lawrence. We have Niels, a smooth jazz guitarist. We have an all-female jazz band called Jazz in Pink. And we have yours truly. I'm a resident here for over 30 years. I'm a member of the chamber. And I perform pretty much all over San Pedro and the world. So it's going to be great, and I would love for all of you to come. And if you don't have any money available to help me, then please purchase some tickets at sanpedromusicfestival.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So let me just mention that Wendy Barnes Farrell is married to ex-City Councilman Bob Farrell, who was our City Councilman in Los Angeles for many, many years and did a wonderful job while he was on the City Council. And I have to mention that anytime I see you or I see him. And also, thank you for the event that's going to be happening out here, because it really puts a light and shines a highlight on what's going on culturally out here in the San Pedro area. So thank you very much. Okay. Any more number 9?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. All right, we're going to item number 10. is an update and discussion of the 2019 Neighborhood Council election by the Office of the City Clerk. Is anybody here from the City Clerk?
Right here. Right there.
Oh.
Sorry.
We were talking about you so bad, I just assumed nobody was here from the City Clerk.
Yes, actually, before I begin, I'd like to say that although I don't represent the funding division, I'm from the election division, I have taken a lot of notes on everything I had to say, and I'll communicate that to Melvin and to Petty as well tomorrow. So, great, I can deliver that as well.
Do you need a copy?
I can take that, yes. Great. Thank you. Okay. All right, so... I'll try to keep this brief, but informative. So the 2019 Neighborhood Council elections have begun as far as the actual elections have started to take place. This past Sunday, we've started our Region 5, the Hollywood Area Neighborhood Councils have had their election. It was a fairly good day, really good turnout. On average, we're looking at between 250, 300 voters for the neighborhood councils, some less, a little bit more. Overall, nothing terribly unusual. Of course, we have issues regarding, you know, disputes between candidates regarding electioneering, confusion over the rules to in order to vote, but our office is going to be troubleshooting those specific issues. Our next set of elections are this Thursday for Central LA, so that's Wilshire Center, Koreatown, historic cultural area, and we're looking for a really robust turnout, especially for Koreatown and also our newest neighborhood council, Historic Cultural North Neighborhood Council. Then, the Saturday is going to be the elections for Silver Lake, Los Feliz, Atwater Village, some of the central area. So we have a really busy week ahead of us. In the meantime, we are going to be wrapping up our candidate filing period. So the neighborhood councils in Region 10, that's West Adams, Empowerment Congress Central area, they just had their candidate filing deadline. Now we only have one active candidate filing period, and that's for the Downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council, which is having their own separate election date. To date, we have over 1,907, give or take, filings for all the neighborhood councils. We've certified roughly 1,750 candidates, and we have about 160 or so folks that are still, you know, pending. We hope to bring that down. So less than 10%. That's really what we're trying to get down to and make sure that we certify as many candidates as possible. The highest number of candidates for a neighborhood council was Mid-City West. They had 55 candidates. The lowest, but still having an election, is Mission Hills. They have 5 candidates, and they'll be having an election on April 27th, I believe. Several neighborhood councils, unfortunately, didn't recruit enough candidates to hold an election, so those elections will be suspended and will be having board affirmations where the certified candidates will be automatically appointed to the board. We have 13 board affirmations this year, and so the number of elections has reduced down to 81. We are recruiting, successfully recruiting community poll workers to serve at the polling place, and this past Sunday we got a good glimpse of what those community poll workers can offer. We've had roughly 130 community poll workers from across the city sign up to serve as poll workers throughout the neighborhood councils, and we're really looking forward to working with them. They're providing actually a lot of essential services, particularly for translations, as a lot of neighborhood councils require specific language translations. So they're of great, great help. Overall, issues that we're seeing, of course, questions about the timing of the elections, the timing of the candidate filing periods, the candidate filing process itself. We're looking to revamp that process going forward. As the commission knows, the application of the community interest stakeholder definition, we're seeing some issues with that, but we're working with the neighborhood councils on making sure that we're consistently applying the definition. We're seeing a lot of requests for early voting options for neighborhood councils, ranging from online voting, vote by mail, to early voting days. So for those voters who may not be able to participate on weekend elections. So those are sort of issues we're going to be addressing going forward as well once the election season is complete. And with that, I can take any questions.
Any questions?
No, but Commissioner Schaefer, yes. I will point out he may be a little bit late, but Council Member Bob Blumenfield has a very nice Facebook post with regards to upcoming neighborhood council elections.
Is it for the candidate filing, or is it just for the election dates?
Well, he encouraged people to run for their neighborhood councils, but he listed the neighborhood councils within his area that will be having elections.
Yes. So,
and he's also, I didn't do the sound, but he's speaking. So I thought it was nice that he's trying to promote things.
Right, and it's a little bit late, but we've also been really happy to coordinate with the department on a series of candidate workshops held throughout the city. One of the successful ones was the Rally in the Valley. We had a lot of neighborhood councils show up, a lot of stakeholders who've never heard of neighborhood councils before come out and learn how to run for as a candidate. We had a similar event in South LA, the Show the Way South LA, that was robustly attended, and we're looking forward to doing some similar events next time around as well.
Any other questions? Ms. Lippman? Mr. Rivalato? No?
Yeah. Commissioner Lippman, so the city clerk was unable to do online voting sufficiently for this election, and the monies that were budgeted for that, which were significant, I think over $250,000, were reallocated towards outreach, and I'd love to, we're really interested in understanding where those monies were utilized in terms of outreach, and what sort of return on investment they had in terms of recruitment for candidates, but also folks who have engaged in the elections. And it would also be very, I think, helpful to kind of see some of those statistics, in the aggregate. Last election cycle, we received kind of like a report showing trends in terms of like, okay, I know this is different because the city clerk is running the election compared to the department, and so there may be data points that don't match up or align, but it'd be very helpful for us to get a report to kind of see overall, like, are we trending towards more engagement? I mean, there are high points, obviously, right? We had Koreatown have the subdivision election where we had 19,000 people vote, which is more people that voted than in the city council election for that same area, which is incredible, right? But then we have these low points with neighborhood councils that can't even recruit enough candidates, right? It's I think it's helpful to see the highs and the lows, but they're not indicative of the median, right? Which for me, I want to see. I always talk about neighborhood councils, right? I mean, we have neighborhood councils that are performing extremely well, neighborhood councils that are not performing very well at all, and then there's a lot sort of that are getting by in some senses. They have struggles, they have some successes, but for us as a commission, what we want to see is all boats being raised, right? We want to see that the neighborhood council system in total is improving, that we're recruiting more people, that we're engaging more people in the elections, that we're doing more outreach in general, and increasing sort of the engagement with the system is really at least my personal interesting goal in this. And so I guess, The real question, the question for you is about the outreach funds, but we'd love to see sort of a report where we can kind of look at some of the numbers and the trends, really the trend line on some of the stuff. The next time you're able to do that, I know you guys are very busy working on that. It may need to be an after elections report, but we do receive kind of feedback from elections, from local neighborhood councils, so we can communicate that as well.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you guys receive plenty of feedback yourself.
Yes, we do. Yes, on a variety of issues.
Commissioner Atkinson.
Yes.
Just kind of for clarification, though, Commissioner Lippman, the city clerk runs the election, but when we talk about improvements that have to be made or some of the feedback that we're getting from neighborhood councils, outreach is still done by the department, and if we want to talk about improvements and how to deal with that, then I think that's a discussion that we have with the department. You're right, we need to get the numbers from the city clerk on trends. I understand that on
yes.
who voted where and when and you know who. And I think that might be helpful in translating, going back to Dunn and saying, okay, here's some numbers. Now we need to know how to improve it. But the outreach is, you know, it's a Dunn purview. You know, did you want
right.
to say something?
Yeah. Grace Ely, General Manager of the Department of Empowerment. First, kudos to Chris and the elections team. They did an amazing job with the elections on Sunday. I drove around to some of the election sites, and they were run really well. And I know that he was problem-solving, you know, on the fly and did very well doing that as well. So thank you. Thank you, Chris.
I want to take the career of neighborhood council all over and say, okay, tell the folks how you did this.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, well, they worked very hard. So I will say that we are doing an after-election report that is going to cover everything that Commissioner Lipman is requesting. And we will work with clerk on getting those numbers so that it'll be all in one report. And our recommendations, what we saw, what worked in certain areas. We've been doing a lot of different types of outreach and have had different success with the various types. So you'll definitely be getting that report.
Okay. Commissioner Regalado.
Commissioner Regalado, I'm hoping that perhaps maybe you'll hang out for a little while so that I have a couple things I really want to say under sure. agenda item number 14 that okay. kind of folds in what we heard earlier today from Northwest San Pedro and impressions that I have in regards to the elections and how we're able to sell our neighborhood councils. It's just my opinion. But I think they kind of blend in at times, so I hope that's okay. That
of course,
that you'll
yes,
kind of hang
absolutely.
Out because I have a few things to say about that.
Yes,
okay,
I'll stick
great.
Around.
Thank you.
You came this far; you may as well stay to the bitter end.
Right.
Commissioner Lipman. I'm wondering, in terms of factual basis stakeholders, what are you seeing? I think it's hard to probably know at this point, but like, what are we seeing in terms of the percentages of factual basis stakeholders, and what definition are you using? Sort of the existing community interest stakeholder, or the one that we or that city council sort of recommended, or what did they do? They passed it, but asked the city attorney to write the ordinance. Essentially, or is it which? Definition is being used for other stakeholder.
For your second question, we're using the current definition. While we would have loved to have used the commission's definition because that gave us a lot more clarity on how to apply
yeah.
it, we're using the current definition right
okay.
now. For trends
sorry,
right now.
Sorry, it took so long on that.
No, I'm sorry. As far as what we're seeing at the polling place, we haven't done an analysis yet just because the elections just started on Sunday. So,
okay.
But the way our registration forms are designed, we will be able to assess who, you know, identified as community interest and see what the trends are.
That is an issue that comes up. Not necessarily to discount those stakeholders because they play a critical role in communities, but there's always sort of that balance of what percentages are residential, business, and owner stakeholders versus the factual basis or community interest stakeholders, and looking at kind of those percentages.
Yes.
Because when you see that percentage above a certain level is when you actually see the most amount of what are they called, grievances and so is there still a 5-day period in which you can contest?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Has that period passed?
No, we're actually in the middle of it.
In
right
the
now.
Middle
we're,
of it.
We're within the period
okay.
for the first region.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that'll be also interesting to kind of
right.
see what the report is coming back on that. Is it still the system by which they go to the grievance panel? And
yes. If it,
okay.
if the challenge meets the
challenge.
Submission guidelines,
right.
then it could go to the grievance panel for a resolution.
Okay.
Yes.
That's also sort of an interesting look at the folks who, you know, who do file, or not the individuals, but overall, like, how many filings were there, because right. It sort of is an indication of, you know, were there serious issues, or were they just sort of, you know, kind of, you know, individualized, right. Sort of, just, you know, as I said, for me, the issue is really the median. It's not necessarily the outliers, right? There's always going to be outliers, right? There's going to be a neighborhood council election where something has gone wrong and people are going to be mad, and we're going to hear from them for the next year. It's just going to happen. Like, you just have to assume it will happen. But really, for me, it's like, what is the overall trend of where we're going as a system? Not necessarily the outliers.
Yes, we hope to pull not only the data, but also identify the types of challenges that are filed as well from this point out.
Thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number 11 is the general manager's report.
Gracie Liu, general manager for the Department of Empowerment. So just a segue for election outreach, as I was mentioning before, we have been trying various types of outreach, from social media to walking man, like, just, you know, hand distribution, to knocking on doors, like the old-fashioned way. And so we've had various success, depending on the neighborhoods, as expected. And we've also tried to go to underrepresented areas, try to go in language, and recruit that way as well. And as Commissioner Schaefer mentioned, we have asked our council members and also our mayor to do PSAs to get out the vote. So they have done that. Mayor Garcetti did one in English and Spanish for us. Councilmember Blumenfeld has done one. Councilmember Rue, Koretz, Kokorian are others that will be doing little PSAs for us to get out the vote. As for other issues, we are still waiting on city budgets. The mayor will be releasing the budget April 20th. From what we hear, you know, there's no extra funding, and so we are kind of waiting to hear whether or not we will get any of our asks for next fiscal year. We are also working on report backs on the neighbor council reforms for city council. So those are due in May, and so we're trying to finish up. We have several 120-day report backs on various issues that we're working on. With the new board members coming on, we are trying to make sure that they get access to Cornerstone, which is the online education platform that city employees have, so that they will have access, on-demand access, to the funding training, ethics training, and then code of conduct as well. So, and it'll also help track, but they'll also get access to all the other trainings that city employees have access to. So it'll be a good plus for them to be on this platform. And we're also, and this kind of goes to the agenda item later on, about training, but we're getting our trainings ready for the new boards. Some of the basic, you know, 10 things that you really need to know to just get started. And then Mike will talk about too. We're doing some Civic U, and there's also other events that we're planning for homelessness. So I'll let Mike speak to those items.
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners and members of the public. Mike Fong, Director of Policy and Government Relations for the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. Just a few quick updates. Civic University, as mentioned by General Manager Gracie Liu, is coming up, and it's going to be on July 15th, July 22nd, and July 29th. It's an opportunity to get new Neighbor Council board members and other returning board members onboarded, but also an opportunity to learn about city government, city structure, the power relationships between the City Council and the Mayor, the City Departments, and the Neighbor Councils. It's a three-session workshop, and it's a partnership with the Pat Brown Institute, and that's going to be on July 15th, July 22nd, and July 29th. We're going to have it at a new location called Central City Neighborhood Partners, which is located centrally in the just west of downtown Los Angeles, and we'll be sending additional information on that in early May. Secondly, some of the initiatives that are happening around homelessness include the Homelessness Resource Fair, which will be held on Saturday, April 20th at Grand Park from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, April 20th. Thank you so much to Mario, Julian, Mary, and the team for all their hard work and efforts in reaching out to many community partners and organizations, along with the Neighborhood Council Homelessness Liaisons. We have over 45 community groups who work on and organizations that work on the homelessness issue confirmed for the event, and we encourage everyone to come that day to learn more about how you can address homelessness, and it's on Saturday, April 20th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thirdly, there's going to be a screening of the movie called The Advocate. It's by Remy Kessler, and it's an opportunity. It's a movie that talks about how one can advocate on homelessness issues and empathize on the homelessness issues. It's a movie and screening that we'll be hosting at the Ron Deaton Auditorium on Tuesday, April 30th from 6:30 to 8:30, and we'll be sending information on that as well. So those are some few brief updates on Civic University and the homelessness initiatives. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. In regards to homelessness, too, we know that many of our neighbor councils are trying to hold meetings, weighing in on either our bridge housing or other policies regarding homelessness. And some of these meetings have turned very, I'm not saying violent, but they have become very unpleasant with a lot of yelling and screaming and have been difficult for our neighbor council members to control the meetings because, it is a very subject matter that is very passionately, like in terms of differences of opinions between community members. So we've partnered with the League of Women Voters. They are going to do a pilot workshop that they have done in the past, and it's how to facilitate difficult conversations, and they are going to tailor it to neighbor council board members who are trying to hold sessions on homelessness in particular. So that's this Saturday at the Marvin Browdy Constituent Center from 9 to 1. And so if that does well and we get good feedback from it, we'll take it around the city and hopefully help other board members to try to hold these meetings and maintain some type of civility so that they can get some of the policy work done. And then lastly, we know that it is Carmen Hawkins' last meeting, staffing the commission meeting, and we just wanted to thank her for her service. Yes, applaud. And wish her well, and I know that she has some time off before she actually officially retires, but we brought you some cupcakes and wanted to thank you for your service. So I'll bring you some cupcakes. But I'm happy to take any questions for anybody else.
Yeah, Commissioner Lippman.
Or do you want to go?
No, you can go first.
You go, then I'll go.
I just want to riff off of General
Sorry.
Manager Liu's comments, and I just, I remember when I first got in the commission, we had a meeting in Hollywood, and Carmen and I got chicken and waffles at Roscoe's nearby, and kind of talked about neighborhood councils, and I was just so impressed by how passionate she is for the system, despite all of the challenges of this impossible job that our city attorney has. I mean, it's just two of them managing 99 neighborhood councils and all the legal issues and liability issues that go along with it. And so, she's been incredibly available to us as commissioners, incredibly helpful to neighborhood council members and neighborhood councils, and it's gonna be hard not to to call her while she's on some beach enjoying her retirement and say, how do we do this, or how does this work, because it's been just it's been helpful to have a partner in this work who believes as passionately as we do about it. So thank you on behalf of all of us, I guess, or at least on behalf of me for
I'd like to say thank you as a neighborhood council board member. You've always made yourself available, and if I contacted you, you were very responsive, and it's greatly appreciated. And good luck, and I'm jealous.
So, the Commissioner Atkinson. So, I've been saying goodbye to Carmen for a long time because we've been knowing that she's leaving, so... Every time we have a meeting, I want to say goodbye because I think it's the last meeting, and then she shows up one more time, and I just wish it were a few more times. I've mentioned before, and I was pleasantly surprised when I joined the commission, and I saw that Carmen was our attorney, because before I got on the commission, I've known Carmen for years and years and years in the political arena and in the community and doing so much on behalf of the community and different issues. So it was definitely a pleasant surprise when I came on the commission and saw that Carmen was our attorney. Now, I haven't always agreed with Carmen, and she's kind of bossy sometimes, and she kind of like doesn't give the advice that I want to hear all the time. But I admire her thoroughness and in the way she contemplates every question that she's asked before she answers, and she doesn't, you know, just come up with stuff off the top of her head, and she's you know, takes her time. And I'm going to, and I'm not letting go of any secrets, but I know where she's going, and I'm going to go and visit sometimes. But she hasn't publicly said, so but I know where she's going, and I'm going to be visiting. Oh, man. Right. And good luck, good luck, good luck. Anybody else want to say anything?
Yeah. Well, first of all, my wife talks about Carmen and how they used to know each other in the city attorney's office. So I got some words about her outside of this area. I don't know how, you know, I've been in neighborhood councils for a long time, and just because of the fact that I have this incredibly low bar number in the state of California, I've always been interested in working with the city attorneys on neighborhood councils. And the one thing I've really enjoyed with Carmen is that she is proactive as opposed to reactive. And that's been a lot of fun, because that's hard to do. But she's come up with ideas, she's come up with suggestions, even before we realized we should be asking some of those questions. So I'm going to miss having her around. And yeah, I think I know where she's going to, so I'm going to say good luck and have fun.
Commissioner Regalado.
I'd like to give the other side of the coin for our friend, the city attorney. My first experience with you was when I got my hand slapped on behalf of the neighborhood council. And I'd like to thank you very much for that, you know. But I'm happy to say that we have now repaired that relationship. And I'm going to kind of miss you, okay? So I hope you really enjoy your retirement. I hope you really enjoy your retirement, because I've grown to respect what you bring to the table. And you have proven to be a wealth of information that helps guide our path, and I'd like to say thank you. And I'm not going to hold that hand slapping against you at all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you want to say anything?
Sure. Okay, I don't know if I can say anything before I start crying. Thank you for all your kind words. In my 10 plus years of actually serving as general counsel to neighborhood councils, one of the things that I attempted to learn and change the how neighborhood council board members viewed the city attorney, from being that body that always told neighborhood councils no you can't do this, or no, you did that wrong, to, I think as Commissioner Schaefer said, I started trying to be a little bit more proactive and help neighborhood councils learn how to do things in a way that when it got to me, I could say yes and work in a partnership. Successful sometimes, not always successful, but I think that we've grown together in that time. There have been a lot of changes during the time that I've been here. I've attempted to adapt. I've also attempted to help the neighborhood councils adapt to the ever-changing rules and protocols and procedures and what you can and can't do now. We're just at that stage in development as neighborhood councils where it's the new growing pains that everybody is going through. And it's my wish and my hope that during this transitional time, even though I won't be here physically, I'll always be here in spirit, that the bodies will grow together. I think I'm leaving you guys in very capable hands with Steve here. I've tried to impart as much as I can to him, but, you know, 31 years with the city, 40 years of practicing law, and I think probably most wisdom I got was raising two sons. They taught me a lot. They taught me a lot over time. I will miss everybody. It's going to be hard walking away, but I'm transitioning from being general counsel to 99 neighborhood councils, a board of commissioners, Department of Neighborhood Empowerment, and the city clerk's office to putting on just the hat of being a grandmother. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to my new adventures and my next assignment. But to all, I won't be too far. You know, I'm an Angeleno. I always will be an Angeleno at heart. I was born and raised here. So wherever my travels take me, I will be back. And you'll see me around. And as Commissioner Atkinson has said, outside of my day job, I am very involved and engaged in the community. And with me taking this hat off, you will be able to see me more because there's a lot of work to be done in our communities.
Thank you, Carmen. Okay, back to business. The next...
Did you want to make inquiry of the general manager?
Oh, right.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. You had something else to say to the
general manager.
Commissioner Schaefer.
Thank you, Commissioner Schaefer. I informed Mike that the link to the 10 things to know as a neighborhood council board member doesn't work. It'd be nice to look at that to see what your starting points are and to see if they really kind of cover the subject or if they're just kind of a gloss over or if anything's been left out. That's number one. And number two, you're talking about these three-hour trainings, and I hearken back to when we used to do those on Saturday mornings in various neighborhood council areas, and we used to have maybe 100 people there at a time. My question is, where do you think you're going to be doing these trainings, and who's going to be conducting them? I see that you're going to start before the elections are even done, so... Those are the two questions, where and by whom?
So we thank you for that. We do know the link doesn't work, so Mike has just sent that over to you, Commissioner, and the 10 things. And it's only 18 pages, so it's not comprehensive. It is a supplement to the actual live training. And right now we're solidifying the final dates and the locations for that, and staff will be conducting those workshops. If you would like to, if commissioners would like to join us in doing that, we'd be happy to welcome you. And so that's the plan for now. But I can talk more about just trainings in general at the agenda item that you have in agenda item 12.
Okay. And I asked by whom, because as much as I love staff, many of them, unfortunately, from what I have seen, may not understand some of the formal things that we look at in the laws that we're under. So I'm hoping that perhaps we can get people like the city attorney's office to come and talk about things like that.
Yeah, I do know that I do know that Elise and Steve have, because Carmen will be out, but Elise and Steve have talked about joining in certain times to assist, but I think those are more along the lines of ethics training, full ethics training.
Well, I'm talking about things with regards to Brown Act. I'm talking about things with regards to what laws are available to neighborhood councils to maintain order within their meetings and things of that nature. A question arises as to how do we assure or ensure, or yeah, to ensure that new board members, all new board members, all newly elected board members, attend these trainings. And if they can't, what provision will be made? Will there be videos? Can they go online, such as that?
So as you know, there are only a few mandated trainings, ethics, funding, and the code of conduct, which is something that can be read or you can watch a video. No other trainings have been mandated. We did discuss this in the past with neighborhood councils probably about 7-8 years ago about mandating certain trainings, and the answer was a resounding no. We are volunteers and we don't have time for this, and we get that. So we are respectful of the wishes of the neighborhood council board members at that time. And I know that's, again, in your agenda item 12, you are going to discuss mandated trainings. I will say that if a neighborhood council falls into exhaustive efforts, then we do mandate trainings. If it's something that a training would help with, if that's the reason why they're in exhaustive efforts. So we do look at the situation, and there are a series of different types of trainings that are available. Once a neighborhood council, or if a neighborhood council gets into trouble, then we can go in there and assist. I guess I'll leave maybe more of the discussion for agenda item 12.
Actually, you know, I don't like the word training. I like the word education sessions.
Education workshops.
Yes, there we go.
Trainings for dogs, okay. I know. You've told me in the past.
Yep. I am taking my new puppy to training. They call it socialization. It's a nice word. Okay. The other thing I'd like to bring up during general managers, plan updates. I think one of the duties of the department is to update the plan. And the last update I have is dated 2013. There have been a lot of things added since then. What effort is the department making, or will the department make, to bring the plan up to date so that when people want to look up things like the grievance ordinance and things like that, they're not mucking around through the ad code, which number of us know how to do that,
right?
But that's not general knowledge.
Right. So we actually are working with city attorney to do that. Carmen just sent me an email with some of the updates that need to go into the plan. We're not only looking at providing those updates, but actually restructuring the plan so that it reads a little easier when you open it, in terms of those subsections and whatnot. We just kind of have to cross-reference it with the admin code. I know Steve had brought up some concern about that, but sometimes it's a little hard to read the plan. So we were looking at maybe doing a structure change on that.
Okay, I look forward to seeing that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, General Manager? Okay, we're going to go to item number 12, of which we also have some speakers that want to speak.
The item simply says it's a discussion of possible action regarding training for the neighborhood council-based members.
Sorry, I have a public comment on item 12.
Well, I was going to read. You're going to speak
do.
On number 12, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I got to open up the discussion and explain what it is, and then we'll have a public comment.
Okay, thank you.
I know you came a long way, and you got to go all the way back.
Oh, man. Yes, but it's okay.
But anyway, but I just wanted to mention and make something clear, too. The discussion of possible action regarding training for the neighborhood council board members. Discussion may include creating policies for mandated leadership and conflict resolution for board members and candidates. It may also include requests to the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment for arrangement of standard trainings as outlined by administrative code. The administrative code says that the department shall arrange training for department staff and neighborhood councils, officers and staff, such as training in leadership, cultural awareness, dispute mediation, civics, communications, equipment utilization, and any other training necessary to achieve the goals set forth in section 22809. I wanted to read that just to say that this is just an opening discussion, that we have no vote to take tonight, that in fact the city attorney is looking at certain things that that we can do to implement some of this. But the issue was, it has come before us from neighborhood councils. Many times people think that the commission, that we sit around and we try to think of something, you know, busy work to keep our jobs. And but the issue of conflict resolution and the issue of leadership development is not coming from us. It's coming from neighborhood councils who have problems. Maybe some neighborhood councils have no problems. Other neighborhood councils do. So this is the opening discussion to see if we need to have some kind of leadership training, not only for new members coming on the board, but some leadership remediation for folks that have been on boards for a long time. And then so many people have conflicts, and just as an example, I met a young woman coincidentally at an event. She said, oh, I'm running for the neighborhood council, and it was one of the neighborhood councils out in the valley. And she said, I went to a meeting, but my goodness, they were yelling at each other and cussing at each other and asking folks to leave the room. And she said she didn't quite know what she was getting into because some folks had asked her to run as and she's still running, but to run as an area representative. And I'm listening to her, and I'm thinking, this is common. We get this discussion all the time from other neighborhood councils, and we need to discuss it and figure out what we're going to do. Is it training? Is it a written procedure? Is it to redo the procedures we already have? What is it? So this is so I'm glad we can take public comment, but just know that we're not making any decision like tonight or even next meeting, because we do have to get some clarification on what we can and can't do. But administrative code right now is pretty clear that the department can do certain types of training and implementation to make neighborhood council the program work a little better. So now.
Thank you.
You may speak.
My name is Sierra Cochran, and I'm the former president of Reseda Neighborhood Council, and I hope that wasn't our council that she was speaking of, but it very well may have been. What I'd like to speak to today is, and I was looking over the agenda, creating policies for mandated leadership and conflict resolution. At Reseda Neighborhood Council, we had great difficulty last year with some of our board members. As president, I tried to resolve it. I wrote some letters, and I think I spoke with Gracie. I remember speaking with Gracie. I spoke with our legal representative, Elise Rudin. I spoke with our liaison, Vanessa Serrano. I spoke with Simi Park. And, of course, our commissioner, Lynn Schaefer. I've worked with Lynn before on other projects, and so I remember writing a letter. The letter was supposed to be confidential from the president to the commission. However, the letter was exposed, I believe, because of the Public Rights Act. And so what was happening at the board meetings was complete mayhem. And as a leader, I felt relatively helpless as in what to do. My job as president is to assure that everyone is safe and that the meetings are run smoothly. Basically, that's what the president is responsible for. We had an individual that was enraged, yelling, screaming, cursing, and threatening people. He kept leaving. He was a board member. He kept leaving the meetings and going outside and coming back in. And many people told me they were intimidated and afraid. This particular board member sort of turned on me and began yelling and screaming and cursing. And so there was the last meeting that I attended, I simply called the meeting. However, there really wasn't any specific thing that I was told that I could do to prevent anything from occurring. So my concern is the safety, you know, of others when we're meeting. The other thing was when I asked our legal representative, which ours is Elise Rudin, if we could at least censure this individual, we were advised against it. So my hands were tied, you know, and this individual became very violent verbally against many people. The last meeting we had, they had to escort me to my car, then they escorted me home. So it got out of hand, and I took it as far as I thought I could take it. So I've spoken to everyone that I believe I could speak to. I do have suggestions. I'm not just here to complain, but I have suggestions as well on item 14. Were you going to say something? I'm pretty much done.
Sorry, we ran out of time.
That's okay. I'm speaking again on item 14.
But we'll give you 30 more seconds just to kind of wrap it up.
Okay, these are my two questions. Yeah. What constitutes an unsafe environment during a board meeting, and what actions should be taken immediately during the board meeting and thereafter when a board member is irate, violent, or upset beyond reproach? Thank you.
I know we're not supposed to respond directly, but I do know that there are some resources, including signs that you can post that with language that has been developed by the city attorney's office. And another action that you can take is to recess the meeting for 5 minutes and even clear the room, essentially, to kind of allow tensions to subside and then restart the meeting if and when it is appropriate. And I know that that has been used, and there are some best practices around that. So something that your NEA can help you with, because your situation is not unique, sadly, amongst neighborhood councils, or isn't unique amongst neighborhood councils.
Okay. Mr. Allen, James.
Good evening. So democracy is messy. We have 243 years of democracy in this country. Our country's fought with itself, gone to civil war. We've even had conflict, violent conflict in our U.S. Congress. And our democracy has survived. Most of what the neighborhood councils get is top down. Thou shalt. We're going to mandate that you guys do this. We get it from the lawyers. We get it from the department. We get it from everybody. Democracy comes from the roots and works its way up. If you're going to give leadership and conflict resolution, make it educational. And ask, if you're going to create a policy, ask for the neighborhood councils to ratify it. The same way that if we were going to change the Constitution with an amendment, that you would ask the states to ratify the Constitution. This is the way in which you get buy-in from your constituents, from your partners, rather than having the finger shook at you by the father figure and telling you what you have to do. Ask them for their permission, ask them for their consensus, and you will see that when you treat human beings like adults, they oftentimes act like it. Now, in terms of controlling a meeting, very definitely you should gather up as many presidents that are having problems with the folks who come to the meetings, and I have an awful lot of experience with this, you know, attacked on social media, disrupting of my neighborhood council.
Thank you.
A gavel works wonder, but you need to have people who can speak with some authority on what the issues are. And I suggest that you use the gavel sometime. It actually works.
Oh, I know how to use it. Thank you very much. Mr. Garfano. Garfano. Well, it says Matthew. Oh, I'm sorry, Matthew Garland. I'm sorry. Mr. Garland first. You're on paper, I forgot. Yeah.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Matthew Garland. I'm with Central San Pedro Neighborhood Council, and this item caught my attention because first, let me say I'm speaking against this idea of mandated training for neighborhood councils. And this item caught my attention because I've been currently embroiled in personal disputes with other board members ongoing for 6 or 7 months. And I have been reaching out to Dunn for solutions and explicitly asking the question, what are the tools available to me to put limits on behaviors that I feel are out of order? And the answer has been there are none. You can file a grievance against the whole council, but that has not been my choice to do because I didn't feel like that was going to address the problem. My suggestion is I would propose creating a dispute mediation team. Gather up some people. James Allen made a great suggestion. Talk to the presidents that have experienced this. Gather up some people that are willing and eager to take this training. Create a team so that when there are problems amongst board members, people have a resource to use. There's problems, you're going to have to go talk to the dispute mediation team or whatever you want to call it. But that would be my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. I think
Bob.
One of the challenges with mediation is that both parties have to agree to the mediation,
right.
Which is good in theory, but sometimes doesn't work in practice, as we found.
Unless maybe it's mandatory.
Yes, hi there.
That's true, unless it's mandatory.
Okay.
Bob.
Say when. Now, Bob Gelfand, Coastal San Pedro Neighborhood Council. In this city, there are three people who were present as governing board members at the very first governing board meeting of any neighborhood council and are still on a governing board at Coastal San Pedro. I happen to be one of them. Over these 18 years or so, I've heard this same argument made many times. I've heard comments, we've got to do something, blah, blah, blah. I've actually never seen anything terribly useful coming out of Dunn or even the Bonk. So, Madam Chair, this is in response to your comment. Yes, I do worry about each new generation of Bonk members coming in and trying to be helpful and trying to do good and trying to come up with some new set of rules that will help in solving human nature. And I keep giving the same answer because I've chaired a lot of meetings over the course of the last 20 or 30 years. Chair has to know what he or she is doing. And I don't see an awful lot of outrageous behavior at the Bonk. We've had a little loud, slightly outrageous behavior at our Coastal San Pedro meeting that was handled inside of 3 or 4 minutes with the presence of the executive director and a couple of police officers, and that solved that. You just have to know when to say you're out of order. It does work. So I'm going to leave it with that. I think that education is great, training is great, make it voluntary, because I don't really think it's going to be all that effective or useful anyway.
Thank you. Mr. Guzman?
I had the pleasure when I was a council member-elect to be trained by Mr. Gelfand and Doug Epperhart So when I went into the neighborhood council, I maybe was a little more prepared than some newly elected councilmen or women. But I think what really should be important for the department to foster is a sense of, like, the fundamentals of democracy and, like, the responsibilities of being an elected representative. And I think that if you can foster that, then I think people will understand that they have a responsibility to learn and seek out the tools that are available to them. When I was elected, I had a sense of responsibility and duty to seek out mentors and to study on my own. Not everyone necessarily has that at the beginning, but if you give them the tools, then I don't think you have to necessarily mandate the training. I think there should be guidelines. I think it's a great idea maybe to reach out to the different alliances and kind of identify good mentors who have been in the council system for years and really know how it works, and then to have guidelines in case there are some alliances that don't have those kind of seasoned members. That way there can be like a fallback like material for like totally fresh and new people if they can't find a mentor. But I think that that would be helpful. There's sort of a difference between disorder from the council and disorder from the public. I mentioned earlier that my council is dealing with some disorder from the public, and that's a little harder to control than, in my opinion, disorder from within, because if you're coming from within and you have a strong chair or strong president, then they'll know that their duty is to the entire council not to dispute, not to really be a mediator between any two individuals on the council, but to make sure that the meeting is just orderly and it's not really like a personal thing. It's just, this is how it has to be because we have a responsibility. So,
Thank you.
I went to the public comment and, you know, didn't ask any commissioners if they had any initial thoughts on this issue. But I'll give my initial thoughts. I thought your remarks were very thoughtful and important, but they don't answer the fundamental problem of folks who, with the first set of folks, the new folks who decide they want to run. And they and neighborhood councils offer forums to come and learn about what you can do, what your duties are, what happens in a neighborhood council, and what your job would be for running for that particular office. Neighborhood councils do that quite a few times, and it's a useful tool, except nobody comes. So these folks are running for office, and they don't know what they're running for. And you can say, well, you know, we want thoughtful people, and you want to try to encourage people, but it just seems that to me, and this is only me, and we'll be discussing it for a while, that there has to be something that says to these folks, if you want to run for office, learn about what the heck you're running for. Come to a forum and make up your mind whether this is really the job you want. And it's not so right now it's not mandatory. The department, and they know I'm so happy, they did a wonderful brochure for trying to encourage women to run for neighborhood council positions. And it was a voluntary thing, and they could, you know, they get the manual. But everybody knows that I loved it. It was absolutely fabulous because it talks about assessing your own talents. It talks about finding folks to help you. Seek out folks in the community. Learn about, you know, it was a very good leadership development pamphlet. And I thought, gee, this could be for everybody. It could be for men, it could be women, and it could be mandatory, because I'm into this mandatory thing. So I understand that we all want to be adults, and we think that folks can act like adults. But you know what? Folks do not act like adults when they should. They come in for a special reason, you know, for a special interest. The neighborhood council movement, The good part of the Neighborhood Council movement is that it's growing, and it's growing in celebrity, and it's growing in confidence, and folks look to neighborhood councils, and then all of a sudden, somebody will say, "Ooh, I better join the neighborhood council. I might want to run for office one of these days. I'm going to join the neighborhood council." Or, "Oh, their neighborhood councils are getting kind of big, and I want to develop some real estate. Let me see if I can, you know, talk them into letting me build a supermarket or something." It's become a special interest sort of thing, and we have to really look at folks when they're running for office, and we have to say, "Can we please just, you know, have a little leadership development?" And that's the first part for new people. Sometimes in neighborhood councils, and this is where we wanted the city clerk to look at numbers on who's running and why some neighborhood councils do real well and why other and while other neighborhood councils don't do so well and not that many people show up. You know, the Koreatown neighborhood council had, you know, 19,000 people, and you might go to some areas in my area, South Central, and 50 people might show up. So how do you do that kind of outreach and make folks understand that this neighborhood council movement thing is really important? And I find, and it could be, and again, it's just conversation that I hear and talk to when I talk to people in my neighborhood councils, is that new folks need training. Folks have been in neighborhood councils for a long time. They like the issue of being in charge of their neighborhood council, and they never have done really good outreach to get new people to come in. That's kind of why we said, you know, really the department needs to do outreach, because neighborhood councils don't do their own outreach unless they call their five friends and tell them to come on and vote for them again for re-election. So they need a little bit of training too. And then you do get a neighborhood council, new folks. Folks have been on there a long time, then all of a sudden they're clashing over the old versus the new, and they all need to learn a little bit about leadership and who has talent and who does what. And so that's why I was getting frustrated over the last years that I've been on here to see that there's no leadership training. Some folks, you know, they want it to be, I don't think the department wants to interfere, even though neighborhood councils believe that. They don't want to interfere that much, and they interfere one way, and neighborhood councils get mad, and when they should be interfering and teaching leadership development and mediating and figuring out conflict resolution, they don't do that. I've been to a neighborhood council meeting, and I love my NEA, particularly NEA that works or one of my neighborhood councils. And the neighborhood councils, they kind of get in a little bit of argument, but they don't say anything because they have to be professional. And they have to, you know, let them argue it out. No, tell them it's wrong, is my theory. But, you know, but you have to do it in a professional way. I think the NEAs get terrible treatment from neighborhood councils sometimes. Get cussed out. Yep. Neighborhood councils don't want to listen to the NEAs. And I think there needs to be some kind of balance somewhere along the way where you know, like Rodney King said, why can't we all just get along? It would be nice if we could finally say that. Anyway, so that's my speech on why I wanted to bring this up in the first place and find out what it is that we can and can't do, what can be mandatory, what can't be mandatory, what's training, what's written, what goes into bylaws, all that. We have to figure out how we want to approach this subject. And I don't want neighborhood councils to feel like we're trying to tell them what to do. I'm just looking and listening to neighborhood councils who say, you know, they need a little, and now if there's a neighborhood council that's doing great, please let me know. And so we can find out what it is they're doing that makes everybody get along. And then once you know, and that can be added into the equation too. This is how it works. And we can use neighborhood councils, I think, better. The ones that are doing well, I think we can use to help other neighborhood councils. Anyway, that's my speech on why we're doing what we're doing. And people can say I'm trying to be bossy, but I'm just trying to bring a little order. And my little friend that said she was going to run for a neighborhood council, I want her to go into a nice neighborhood council where everybody gets along. And then she won't be cussed out the room.
Comments?
Mr. Regalado?
The premise of this particular agenda item, I think, is probably warranted based on some of the things we heard today and based on some of the things that we probably have gathered over time, just going back to all of our different corners of the of our neighborhood council communities. One thing that I very much feel is part of the obligation we have as representatives of our particular regions is to be able to have a true accounting or assessment as to just what it is that we are going to be asking other neighborhood councils to do. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that we should feel that the four of us who are here today or the, you know, giving the other members who are not here the task of trying to figure that out. If this is something that we're going to do, I think there are enough pieces here that warrants the fact that we need to go to our neighborhood councils to find out what it is exactly mm-hmm. they need.
I agree.
And these things should, we should do everything we can to hold some type of public accounting, whether it be maybe at some of the alliances or whether it be special hearing opportunities. But I feel, in all fairness to neighborhood councils, you know, some neighborhood councils may feel that dispute mediation, I tend to want to call it dispute resolution, would be warranted. But there may not be others. But however, these others may say that we can certainly use some cultural awareness, because if we're better equipped with cultural awareness, then we may be avoiding some of the problems that come around down the line. I like the premise, but I think we have work to do if we're going to do it in a way that we best represent our communities, and we need to be doing it with their input so that when we come up with a decision, that decision represents what our communities are actually feeling. So I'd like to just make sure that perhaps maybe we do this the right way if this is the path we're going to be going down.
I agree. Mr. Schaefer?
Okay, I agree with Commissioner Regalado. We need input, and I think that the way we get input is the way we've gotten input this evening from neighborhood councils. We've held town hall type meetings in the past. We can do that again. I think that we should do that on a couple of things. Let me say that I find it very interesting listening to some of the comments, because I know that I have gone to different neighborhood councils in my area. I have watched them, and I find that those who have knowledge, my friend Bob Gelfand has good knowledge of Robert's Rules, and he knows that Robert's Rules give certain authority to the chair, give a certain authority to the body. There's others that have absolutely no idea what they can do. There's others that know that the Brown Act allows for certain things to be done when a meeting's been disrupted, but there's others who don't even know where to find the Brown Act. There are those of us who know that there's laws in the state of California, one that makes it a misdemeanor to disrupt a public meeting, and how to call a recess, how to clear the room, how to attempt to get help, things of that nature. There are others that don't. I find that, very seriously, the greatest pushback comes from two sources. One, those who are out here who know the rules and know how to do it and have good leadership skills and can bring order to the chaos that sometimes occurs at neighborhood councils. And the other ones that object to it are those who are most in need of it, because they don't know how to do it, but they think it gives them power to be able to disrupt, power to frighten other people into doing what they want to see done or backing off on issues and such as that. I know my own neighborhood council went through a few years where it was very difficult to continuously be calling to task those that were in leadership. But some of us did that. And we were considered disruptive when we said, you can't do that because. That has come to an end. So what I think I'm saying is that there are those that wouldn't benefit from what I refer to as educational sessions because they already know what to do. There are those that will resist it but really need it. And then there's all those in between that have absolutely no idea what they're doing. I recall looking at a new chair of a neighborhood council at a meeting and bringing up a point of order indicating that the chair had the right to declare a particular board member out of order because of what the board member was doing. The board member looked up and said, the president does not have that right or that power. And the president, not knowing, basically agreed and let the conduct go on. So for those types, yes, we really do. And I don't think that there's anything nasty. I don't think there's anything dictatorial about saying, hi, you know, we're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about Robert's rules. We're going to talk about how you recognize somebody for making a motion. No, you're not allowed to just shout out, say, I want to make a motion. You're not allowed to look up and say, oh, call the question. Well, that's a motion. You know, you've got to be recognized for things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, even my own neighborhood council, I get people looking and saying, well, I think thus and so. And I have to look at them and say, would you like to make a motion? Is that a motion? Can I do that? And I say, yes, absolutely, you can. Let's do that. And you know, I mean, they just don't. It's the basic things that a lot of people don't understand. Now, with the public, if the public is disrupting, then you've got to use what you've got in the Brown Act. You've got to use what the state of California says you're allowed to use. You've got to have the ability to look up and say, hi, we're recessing for 5 minutes. And if necessary, tell everybody to get out. That happened at one of my meetings recently when we didn't do something that a large segment of the public that was there, who didn't even belong in our neighborhood, well, excuse me, they were not from our neighborhood council area. And they, after we recessed, they got up and began screaming in the faces of our neighborhood council board members. But, you know, one of our board members realized that one of the main disruptors was a countryman of his, began to speak the same language, walked him outside. They talked for a while. Things calmed down. And the meeting went back on. Next time that group comes, I'm going to make sure my senior lead officer is going to be there. But, you know, people sit there and say, oh, we're going to be trained. No. What I'd like to see is, yeah, find out what they need most, but impart knowledge to the neighborhood council board members. Because if they know what the rules are, if the board members know what the rules are, when the president looks up and says, I'm sorry, you haven't been called on, I'll let you know when it's your turn to speak. They may be frustrated, but they'll at least understand that that is the proper procedure, and they have to wait until they're recognized. So I don't see anything wrong with this. You call it training, call it education, whatever it is, learning what the rules are, learning how you act and such as that. As far as dispute resolution, that's a whole different area. It's completely and absolutely different. And Commissioner Lippman is right. Both sides have to agree. You can't have a dispute resolution without both sides going to it and such. But, you know, you have to perhaps the next item, which is item 13, you have to say that neighborhood councils have a right to do something to correct the action of board members that act in a way that disrupts the meeting. So that's where I am with this. I'd like to get the input. I'd like to get it from town halls. I'd like to see what they have to say, but I don't see anything wrong with moving forward with some type of, hi, we're going to do this, and as a board member, you're going to have to come and listen because you're going to have to learn what the rules are and how you act. It's not our rules. It's not our rules. It's rules that are out there for all groups that meet in certain ways. So
and by the way, just for clarification, Mr. Regalado, we wouldn't go forward with anything unless we talked to all our neighborhood councils and went in our regions and had town halls or however we wanted to do it. This was just an opening kind of salvo that this is an issue that has come up. And I actually have written some ideas down and sent it to our city attorney, to Elise Rudin. And we have to talk, and then we have to talk with the department. And there's a lot of things we have to do to get ready to maybe do some public hearings where people could do input. But I didn't want you to think that we were just going to go make a procedure without, you know, getting some input. Commissioner Lippman?
Yeah, I thank you all for these comments. They're really helpful. I think you're right that we need training for. I think we need to think about it broadly. I think we need training for a board member who's just been elected to the system, but I also think it's critical for a board member who was there before the creation of the system, because as we know, things change, policies change, the way things work change, and so it's always critical to be educated. The sort of argument that we're just volunteers and we shouldn't be mandated to take training, I think, is a specious argument, because if you volunteer to participate in this system, just like you might volunteer to sit on a nonprofit board, you have to go through some training, right? There's disclosures, there's conflict of interest, there's harassment training, even if you're a volunteer board member, because things have gotten out of hand in certain situations. And so no matter if it's a volunteer position or a paid position, right? If you're in a paid position, there's always training, mandatory training. But volunteers have to go through training as well at both nonprofit organizations and in this case, as a voluntary elected official. I do think, though, and I'm still sort of, I am still of the opinion, I haven't really been convinced yet that it necessarily needs to be mandatory. I really do think that we need a carrot to encourage people to do this voluntarily, either it being some sort of certification, some recognition, some incentive. So if one board member, this is something we're discussing, potentially if a board member does a certain training, the neighborhood council gets a certain amount of money, $100. If all board members on a board do training, the whole neighborhood council gets a bonus for having all neighborhood council members on their board do a training. And that way, they are recognized and rewarded for their service. Another way to incentivize people is to give them certifications for other things that they might be trying to work on. An advanced degree, certification for their profession, for instance, either a teacher or a nurse or whatever their profession may be, and then recognition by the department or the commission, some form of plaque or recognition. People appreciate those type of things. So I think there are ways to incentivize people to be better trained rather than just sort of saying, everybody has to do this. So
he's trying to talk me into this. I don't agree with him, and he doesn't agree with me. But we know something needs to be done. You're usually supposed to fill out a slip, but I also know that that's not we don't legally have to. So if you have something to say regarding this issue, you may get your minute.
All right. My name is John DeMeglio. I'm a newly elected board member on the Northwest City Council, Neighborhood Council. And just, I just want to state that I think after I was elected, and I think before I was sworn in, I'm not positive, that there was a class given to us. And it was very, very helpful to me and to, I think, everybody. And that was a big showing of people that were in that meeting. And I think it's very, very helpful to everybody newly elected or even anybody that wants to come in to rehash what they know or have to scale or even comment on what they know and everything. So I just wanted to say that I think it's very, very helpful. Education, training, or whatever you want to call it, I think it's Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it for number 12. We are now on item number 13. Oh, did you have anything?
Can we take a 2 minute break? I need to use the facilities. Can we break for 2 minutes?
We have to break for a minute. Sorry.
Because of quorum. I'll be right back.
We just have 1 minute. You have 1 minute.
Okay.
Sorry. Pause for the cause. Lillian,
would you go ask the last speaker his name?
Yes. I know, I missed that too.
Yeah, we all did. He was speaking rather quietly. Yeah, I know it was there was a palace.
It's like Gerald or something.
Yeah,
kind of hungry
myself.
Palace Coup. Palace
Coup? Yeah, one of our board members violated the Brown Act.
Yeah.
Spoke to a whole bunch of new members
about
who won.
Ooh.
They would vote for
it. Interesting. Is that right?
Ooh, peanut butter is really good.
Electioneered for a particular person. Well, what they were doing was literally, you know, outreach. Everything should be outreach.
Ah.
So, okay, the outreach was at $5,000. So we're going to go spend this and look at them and say, excuse me.
Okay, if
you're going to spend money,
he doesn't want to eat in front of everybody.
You need to vote for a specific line item. Well, no, you don't.
I do. I want it so bad.
If you want to. And then we fought over it. Huh. And, you know, this went on for 2 years.
Wow.
Just insane.
No, but it's good.
So
it's good?
Well, between elections.
Ah.
So then we formed a slate.
Yeah.
No,
I'm just going to say a couple things in support.
Good
of both
for
of
you.
But well, we expected at least one person to be
not
elected,
just,
and even she was.
What's this issue?
We've been getting along pretty well.
Yeah.
I would have to say that the chair has a good influence.